Tom Lehrer. You can't get enough of him. And the beauty of that man, among other things, is that he said, please play my songs. Please do not give me any money and leave me alone. I'm a mathematician. And just absolutely brilliant. One of the, you could call him a conscience. America has a little bits and pieces of its culture. They can be labeled conscience. I believe we have with us Safar Bengash. Show you there.
Hello, Phil. Yes, I am with you.
Boy, it's good to be talking to you today because there's a two very items. One, we want to ask you about the Prime Minister imprisoned, Imran Khan, and when we want to ask about Baluchistan. I guess we should start with Imran Khan because on August the 5th, there is an action being scheduled or planned, and I don't know any of its substance. Could you talk about him and what his situation is and what the background of this a matter that would lead to a call for action on August the 5th?
Yes. Basically, as you said in your introduction, Prime Minister Imran Khan, because he was the elected Prime Minister and illegally removed by the military in April of 2022 under orders from the U.S. And on February the 8th of 2024, there were general elections held in Pakistan when Imran Khan was already in prison. His party was not allowed to use its traditional symbol of a cricket bat. Its candidates, many of them were not permitted to register. So they had to scramble and get other people to stand in for the election. And until midnight of February the 8th, as election results were trickling in, Imran Khan's party had an absolute majority in parliament. And then we saw military goons enter polling stations. They grabbed the ballot boxes, took them away, and the next morning they overturned the result and gave parliamentary seats to a political party which is referred to as the Pakistan Muslim League, Nawaz Group, which belongs to the former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif. They had won only 17 seats by midnight, according to the Election Commission of Pakistan's results. But the next morning, they were given a majority. Mm. And of course, people were very unhappy. Now, with respect to this issue of a call by Imran Khan for countrywide protest on August the 5th, Imran Khan was arrested on August the 5th of 2023. So he will complete 2 years in prison on August the 5th. And he faces something like 80 different charges. All of them, almost every legal expert has said that these charges are completely bogus. They have no validity. It is just that the Pakistani army, led by a very devious and brutal character, who knows that if Imran Khan were to come to power, then this army general and the coterie of generals with him, who are thoroughly corrupt, dishonest, they have repeatedly violated the constitution, that they would be held accountable and they would obviously lose all of their ill-gotten wealth. So what they have embarked upon is to remove one political leader who is extremely popular in Pakistan. In fact, in Pakistan's entire history, no politician has enjoyed such popularity as has Imran Khan. In the past, when political leaders were thrown in prison, they were soon forgotten by the masses. Imran Khan's popularity shot up even more since he has been in prison. And he's being tortured in prison. He's being denied all of the basic rights that an ordinary prisoner is entitled to. Just to give you an idea, he is kept in isolation for 22 hours. He's been kept in a death row cell as if he has committed a murder when he hasn't. Mm-hmm. There is no electricity in his cell. Now imagine, these are summer months, and in Pakistan, temperatures soar up to 45 to 50 degrees centigrade. They don't give him clean water. There is no, there is not even a fan in his room, much less an air conditioner. So you can imagine the kind of conditions in which he's being kept. And this is all the army that is exerting pressure on him. And they're demanding of him that Imran Khan should quit politics, leave the country. And they are demanding of him that there was an incident that took place on May the 9th of 2023, when Imran Khan actually was being presented in a court of law. He was in the court when army commandos attacked the court and dragged Imran Khan out of the court, which was against the constitution, against Pakistan's law. And, of course, there were protests being held all over. And there's a particular incident for which Imran Khan is being blamed, and it is laughable. And that is that there was a mob that attacked the general's home in Lahore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is a 2-kilometer stretch from the Mall Road, which is a sort of central area in Lahore, to the general's house. I've traveled on that road myself. There are military checkpoints every 100 or so yards. A person has to stop. They have to go to the checkpoint, provide their ID, and their names are registered. So imagine on a 2-kilometer stretch up to the general's house, there are literally dozens of check posts. On that particular day, there was absolutely no check post manned by the military. Now, one has to ask the question as to why weren't there military personnel. If there was a protest taking place, surely one would expect that there would be check posts and they would not allow the people to go there. Even though there were members of Imran Khan's party, but their statements on camera urging their people not to do anything illegal, not to damage anything, because they said all of this property, everything belongs to us. These are the assets of the country, so we don't want to destroy anything. Because normally in protests, when people are angry, they set fire to buses or buildings or things like that. Nothing like that happened. But before any of Imran Khan's supporters came even close to that general's house, there was already a mob there, smashing windows, setting things on fire, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the army is blaming Imran Khan, saying that he unleashed this mob. He was in detention. He was in a court of law. He didn't even know this was happening over there. How on earth could he have said that? And Imran Khan is saying, okay, you're blaming me for what happened on May the 9th of 2023. And the army is saying, you should apologize for that and seek forgiveness. He said, I want you to bring out the CCTV footage all along that road and see what took place and see whether any of our supporters did it or it was a hired mob by the army to basically have a false flag operation to blame it on Imran Khan.
Mm-hmm.
What I can say to you is that Pakistan is heading for a disaster, and it is the direct result of this criminal general that is in power, who suffers from a deep inferiority complex, and he is hell-bent on protecting his and the army's privileges, illegal privileges. Mm-hmm. They are robbers, they are thieves. These generals have become multi-billionaires. Just to give you a Canadian connection to that, in Canada, in Mississauga, there are literally hundreds of retired Pakistani military officers, ranging from the rank of a colonel to all the way to a general. These people have come to Canada in the last 15 years or so. They own apartment blocks. They bought apartment blocks. Now, I've lived in Canada for 51 years, and I've barely been able to manage to buy a house. So I want to know...
You need a financial advisor.
Exactly. Where the hell did these colonels and brigadiers whose salary, if you convert it into Canadian dollars, would be about $2,000 a month or less. How on earth did they buy these apartment buildings? Not just an apartment, but apartment buildings, number one. In Midland, Ontario, which is just north of Barrie, these generals and colonels have bought vast land holdings, hundreds of acres of land, and they have set up their own colonies. Again, one is supposed to ask, where did they get all this money from? What I'm trying to get at is that these military people have become, are actually, they were always thieves, but they have now been exposed. They are criminals. They are robbing the country. They are destroying the country. Pakistan is in deep economic mess.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, in light of that, what is the August 5th, what's like the general call there? Because it's very hard for, clearly, for the population to challenge the army. That's dangerous in any part of the world.
Correct.
So what are they calling for on August the 5th?
Okay. Basically, August 5th marks the day when Imran Khan was arrested the second time and thrown in jail. So it's his second anniversary of his arrest and incarceration in horrible conditions in prisons. Now, what is he calling for? Imran Khan has issued a call for the people to say that you have to come out and hold protest rallies peacefully. He has always insisted, he said, you must not break the law, you must remain within the bounds of the limits that Constitution has placed on people, that there should be no violence, but you should demand for your own fundamental rights that the military has usurped.
Mm-hmm.
And the military, of course, is in no mood to accept any of these because they know that they are violating the Constitution.
Yeah.
They are the ones that have broken the law.
Mm-hmm.
Only 2-3 days ago, there is an area that used to be the former tribal area, which was then a few years ago absorbed into the province that is called, that borders Afghanistan. It's called the Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province. Now, over there, the military has now set up a brigade headquarter. A few days ago, they fired mortars at a village in which a number of children were killed. And the people of that village, they, in one particular incident, there was a 5-year-old girl who was killed by this mortar. And obviously, the mortar was fired by the military. And we'll discuss why the military, you know, did that and what is their purpose. But anyway, this elderly person, whether he was the girl's grandfather or whatever, he picked the girl's body and he, along with other people, marched towards the brigade headquarters completely peacefully without any sort of, violence or anything, to basically complain to them and say, look, this is what you have done to our children. Why are you killing our children? What is it that we have done?
Mm-hmm.
And what is it that this child has done, for God's sake?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there was several thousand people that followed him, and the army came out of their brigade headquarters with guns blazing. Without warning, they started shooting at these people, the people that were coming.
Mm-hmm.
And they killed 7 people on the spot. I checked. I've been told that there are many more casualties. A lot of people have been injured. Initially, the army issued a statement and their agents in the official media, they said, oh, this was done by terrorists, and they were responsible and the army didn't do it. But there is video footage available of that. People have filmed that the army personnel came out in their uniforms with their guns blazing. They are firing at these people.
Yeah.
And of course, when this information was broadcast on the internet, then the army changed its tack and they said, we want to hold a meeting with the people of that area, and we want to see how we can resolve this issue. So they said we'll pay compensation to those people that have died and compensation to those that have been injured, etc.
Yeah.
This is basically to mollify and pacify the people. Now, the question that needs to be asked is, why is the army attacking people in that particular area? Basically, what it is that that area has a lot of very important minerals.
Mm-hmm.
A few days ago, in fact, 4 or 5 days ago, on Friday, last Friday, the Pakistani foreign minister was in Washington, D.C. And on June the 16th, the Pakistani army chief was invited by Trump to the White House for a private lunch. Can you imagine?
Yes, I wanted to ask you about that. Because Trump said that, and by the way, generals do not meet presidents. Presidents meet presidents.
It's a
peer system. And
right.
And he said that the general had invited him to visit Pakistan.
Yeah.
Now, who gave him that authority?
Correct. You see, so basically the general was invited because Trump knows and the whole world knows that it's this general that is ruling the country.
Trump said he called him to the White House.
Yes.
It was Trump's idea.
Yes, exactly. Against protocol, because as you said, the presidents meet presidents, not generals.
Yeah.
Anyway, in that meeting, the Pakistani general promised to Trump that Pakistan would be willing to offer mineral resources to Pakistan, to America, because America is desperate for these mineral resources, particularly rare earth minerals that are referred to. You know, these mm-hmm. are used in electric vehicles, and they are the future. And China has said that it is going to be withholding some of these minerals from America.
Yes.
So that particular area that I'm referring to is rich in these minerals, as is the province of Balochistan. And you had mentioned Balochistan, and that's the other province where these minerals are located. And instead of the Pakistan army and the Pakistani state working with the people in conjunction with them, they want to subdue them, they want to crush them, and they want to control all of these minerals so that these generals can make money out of it.
Yes. And now, by the way, if I can intervene right there, because that I notice that I'm reading articles. I saw one in Al Jazeera that said, and had the thesis, that this is that India and Israel are both taking a very close interest, as would the United States eventually, because it becomes another opportunity to put their nose in there, to get involved, and to see if they can cause destabilization, particularly in the Islamic Republic. There's been isn't the area where the attack on the courthouse an area with close to Balochistan?
Yes, absolutely. It was on the Iranian side of Iran. Also has a province called Balochistan. It's actually called Sistan Balochistan, whereas Pakistan's province is called Balochistan. Now, this area, of course, is rich in minerals, etc., and the attack took place on a courthouse in Zahedan, which is the capital city of Sistan Balochistan, the Iranian province. This is true that India, Israel, America, they're all involved in Balochistan's affairs. They want to destabilize.
And there are deep water ports there, too.
Correct. Gwadar port, which, again, is a very important seaport, which the Chinese have built, and America does not want China to basically have control over it. And the idea is that America wants to block the Chinese access to these mineral resources in Balochistan. A number of Chinese engineers are working there. They've been attacked and murdered. There is no doubt that India is involved because India wants to destabilize Pakistan. There is no doubt that Israel is involved because it wants to destabilize Pakistan. America is involved. Now, the thing is that instead of the Pakistani army and the state working with the people to control the situation. They proceed with attacking their own people. The tragedy with militaries is that they are trained to destroy. They're not trained to build. And so that's the thing that they are doing. Now, the Pakistani army and military, etc., they're not capable of confronting India. So they have to fight somebody. They have to conquer somebody. So they keep on conquering their own people, attacking their own people,
yes,
killing their own people, causing death and
destruction. By the way, the encounter with India, there's another one that has really, you know how wars can become like, they eclipse politics. I mean, once people say, oh, well, now we're at war with this, you know, entity, then people who, like Imran Khan, get shunted aside because, oh, there's going to be a war. It makes it very difficult to actually have democratic politics or, you know, voices of opposition. It becomes very simple to shut down resistance. But then I want the third issue, a second with that is, Trump now inserts himself in, and he says he's the reason there's peace between India and Pakistan.
Well, basically,
and you know, he makes himself a player.
What had happened was that India was using the pretext there had been an attack on tourists in Indian-occupied Kashmir in April. And India, of course, in a knee-jerk reaction, immediately blamed Pakistan for it and said, well, Pakistan is responsible for it. Pakistan said, well, look, why don't we have an independent international commission to investigate this and let them come to a conclusion instead of you blaming us. But India, of course, you know, was gung-ho. Then in May, India launched an attack on Pakistan using, now of course nowadays, mm-hmm, wars take place not through ground invasions but through missiles and drones and air force planes, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of Pakistani air force bases were targeted, including one, a very crucial one, which is called the Noor Khan Air Base. It's in Rawalpindi, Islamabad, including the headquarters of the Nuclear Control Center. Of course, there's no nuclear weapons there, but that's the center from where nuclear decisions are made.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of other Air Force bases were attacked and various degrees of damage was inflicted. And the Pakistani general, who thinks of himself as a hot shot, he knew that if he takes on India, that Pakistan would be humiliated. But the Pakistani Air Force was not prepared to accept this because they said, so many of our air bases have been hit and we are just sitting down and not doing anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
So the Pakistani Air Force, they launched their planes.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have to say that China helped them in this.
What was it? Chinese-made planes, right?
Not only Chinese-made planes, but China supplied them what is referred to as PL-15 missiles, which have a range of about 150 kilometers. But more crucial than that, China provided electronic support in the sense that Pakistani planes were able to jam the Indian planes' radar systems, so they could not, they were basically then flying blind. They couldn't know that, you know, Pakistani planes were coming in the other direction or whatever. So mm-hmm. when these planes were up in the air, Pakistani planes or the pilots had locked onto five Indian planes, including the much touted Rafael plane provided by France to mm-hmm. India.
Mm-hmm.
And these pilots, of course, you know, they sought permission from the ground that we have locked these planes. We want permission to fire at them, because they've targeted so many of our air bases. And the Pakistani general, the man in charge in the military, I mean army, he said, no, don't do that. And it was at this stage that the Pakistani Air Force chief put his foot down and he said, my pilots are so angry at what India has done to our air bases, and you are sitting there in your headquarters, you are shivering in your pants and in your boots, My pilots are refusing to accept these orders. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to stop them. I'm going to tell them to go ahead and blow up these Indian planes.
Yeah. Well, by the way, if I could ask right there, it suggests that there is real tension, political tension, within that military. And when you think of Trump's agenda, which is he would like to put an end to the cooperation Pakistan-China, but if there's one sort of stable relationship, it's been Pakistan-China. How can these three parties go through the same door together?
Exactly. Basically, Trump's and America's policy has always been to block Chinese access to various regions. Basically, they want to prevent China from making inroads in Central Asia, in South Asia, in the Middle East, etc.
By the way, that isn't military pressure. It's growth. It's political and economic relationships, right?
Correct. And China has always pursued the policy of a win-win situation, whereby it invests in countries, it provides them financial support. In many instances, for instance, in Africa, China has done wonders. For instance, the African Union headquarters, built at the cost of $400 million in Addis Ababa, Chinese built that and gave it for free to the African Union. And they said, here it is, take the keys. Mm-hmm. China has built roads in Africa. In many countries, it has not charged them. Mm-hmm. China, of course, plays the long game. What it does is that by building roads, it's actually building goodwill. And so it is able to then enter into agreements with these African countries for mineral resources, etc. And a number of African countries have thrown out French and American and other forces because they see those forces as not benefiting the African countries. In fact, they are sources of destabilization. Whereas Chinese and China doesn't have any military forces there, but they go there with economic forces. But Russia does have something. They've been able to restore peace against terrorists. You know, for instance, in Niger, the French were there for 10 years and they said, we are here to fight terrorists. In fact, terrorism continued until those terrorists arrived in the capital city. Mm-hmm. And the same with Burkina Faso, with a number of other African countries,
yes,
where French forces were involved. Those countries threw out the French forces, and when Russians came, they were able to clean out these terrorists in less than a month. So that gives you an idea of how France and Germany and America, etc., they play their dirty games in Africa and all over the world. Mm-hmm. Whereas Russia and China go there to basically help those countries, at the same time, of course, to enter into agreements that are of benefit to China and Russia as well. But to come to the situation of Pakistan, definitely America wants to cut off Chinese access through Pakistan to that port at Gwadar and to cut off Chinese access to the mineral resources in Balochistan, which are estimated at between $6 to $8 trillion.
Yeah, and isn't it also a project to further destabilize, if they can, the Islamic Republic?
Exactly, because, you know, that's a long...
I mean, it's only a short while ago they were bombing them. Now they're talking about getting themselves involved in Balochistan.
No, but in Balochistan, America has been involved for a long time. For instance, in 2006, an American colonel, a retired colonel, Ross Peters, he had actually published an article in the American Soldier magazine. It was titled Blood Borders. And he had suggested, and this is an outline that he had made, particularly with respect to Balochistan, that there should be a greater Balochistan created over there, which would comprise Pakistani side of Balochistan as well as Iran's side of Balochistan. So you can imagine.
And if that were recognized, you could put your forces right on the ground.
Correct.
To help them out.
That, of course, would deny Pakistan access to the the Arabian Sea, yes. the Persian Gulf, and it could become a
And there are organizations that are saying online that they are declaring an independent Baluchistan.
Yes, exactly.
And catering and saying this loudly to India and praising the government of India.
Yes. So
very dangerous.
Of course, this double game, in the sense that on the one hand, there are separatist groups in Balochistan. In fact, even the Israelis are getting involved in it.
Yes.
They have set up, not in Israel itself, but in Washington, D.C., there is an American think tank, which is basically...
Yes, memory.
Exactly. Which is linked, which is run basically by an Israeli, Mossad colonel.
Think he's the leader of the Baluchistan independence movement.
Yeah, exactly.
And no, so that's very dangerous.
Exactly. They're playing a very, very dangerous game. But my point with respect to Pakistan is that, unfortunately, the Pakistani army is walking straight into the trap that is being set up by Israel and India and America.
Yeah.
And that would cause massive, disruption in Pakistan. I fear that Pakistan would disintegrate. This is my great fear. And unfortunately, the only person who can keep Pakistan together is Imran Khan, because he's the only politician who has support throughout the country.
Yes.
And the generals are keeping him in prison. They don't want him around because, they say that he...
So often around the world, the man in prison is the solution to the problem.
Exactly.
Zafar, you've been very eloquent. You've covered so much ground. We are deeply appreciative. Thank you very, very much.
It's my great pleasure. Thank you, Phil.
Bye-bye. Zafar Benkash. And just write that and go online and you can get all the things you need to know. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'll tell you a quick book note. Please remember to look at Fred Anderson's book or get a copy, Eyes Have Seen, and also the book by Ann Charney, Dobrindt. If you we talk summertime, people talk about summer reading. Those are the two books, Ann Charney and Fred Anderson, brilliant books. That's Baraka books, by the way. And I think we've just about covered the whole thing. Mike has been looking after us, so we're safe and sound. And 33, 45, 78 is coming up. We might even have a taste further of Tom Lehrer. I don't know. Probably. And we'll see you next week.